September 17, 2021. It's a Watt for Pedro show.
Themselves in moonlight and cum.
Show Happy Friday. Started the show with the Love Supreme Part 2 Resolution Breakdown. I guess Clams in the studio, even John Coltrane, Blue Clam, or somebody in the band did, which is amazing, right? McCoy Tyner, Jimmy Garrison, Elvin Jones. Whoa. Vernal Pool after that with Fucking in the Grove.
Yeah.
You can tell people I'm not man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Dan Boucher. How you doing, Dan? Welcome aboard.
Thanks, Mike. I'm doing awesome, and thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited to be on the show. So how are you doing?
Let's give a big thank you to Alec for the connect.
Yeah, of course. Thanks and love to Alec always.
Beautiful, beautiful. And what time are you talking to me from?
I am right now in Glendale, Arizona. So I recently moved back to the desert after being in Providence, Rhode Island for a decade. So yeah, so we're state neighbors right now.
Yeah, because Alec was telling me about that Providence stuff.
Yeah.
Right, right. But let's go way back with you on the beginning of your musical journey. Dan, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
I will. I think, okay, so the earliest musical recollection I can say from a band standpoint is, I've thought about this a lot over the years, and I remember having a 7-inch, or when I was a kid, we called them 45s in the late 70s. And I think one of my favorite songs ever that really stuck out to me was Hello Goodbye by the Beatles. So I really lucked out as a child because I'm the youngest of five children, and my oldest siblings are 14 and 15 years older than me. So in the late 70s, there was just always awesome music in my house. You know, my sisters, like, you know, they loved like Fleetwood Mac and Cheap Trick, you know, like all the good stuff back then. So when I was a little kid, you know, I'd safe to say, like a lot of people of the time, maybe my childhood was a little turbulent back then. So I really clung to music, and my sisters having a turntable and just a slew of records in their room, I would always go in there and just listen to, you know, like things like Kiss blew me away. I mean, you know, as a little kid, just like I would just study those record covers, and like just everything about it blew me away. So my oldest sister Denise, or my second oldest sister Denise, took notice of this, and she bought me a drum kit, like a little toy drum kit, when I was 3 years old for Christmas, just after I turned three. And that was a really definitive point in my life, because I think I destroyed that little drum kit within a couple days. And I just knew that that is what I wanted to do. And right around that time, maybe within the next year or 2 years, I remember I was sitting on the floor of my living room, and this was in Mission Viejo, California. So the first 7 years, you know, we were in Southern California, and I remember, I don't know what program it was, whether it was like American Bandstand or one of those music shows at the time, they had Blondie on. And I remember they just kept showing close-ups of Clem Burke playing drums. And I was just like, that fucking dude is so cool. I want to be him. So I was introduced to music at a really, really early age. And, that, you know, I would say even from there, you know, that it's just been a major, like, or the major guiding force in my life.
So that's quite a memory.
Yeah.
Now, besides that drum set, was there any other instruments in the pad in Mission Viejo?
There wasn't, no. My family's very artistic. All of my sisters are painters and sculptors and artists. But there's no other musicians in my family. My grandmother played mandolin, a little bit, but it was never really talked about all that much.
What about school, Dan? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
I wasn't, nothing, nope.
Okay.
It wasn't really available.
I just asked because some schools got rid of their programs and stuff like that. So what about another drum set after you destroyed the kiddie one?
Yeah, so it became a thing that pretty much every Christmas I would get a kiddie drum kit. I had a Muppets drum kit at one point that was really awesome. It had Animal on the snare drum. And then, you know, that went on for a while. Also, what I used to do in our garage in Mission Viejo is I would take my dad's fishing buckets, flip them upside down, and I found a tire, like a bicycle tire rim that I put on one of them, and that was my symbol. And for drumsticks, like, I don't know if this will trigger a memory for anyone, but my parents used to have these pants hangers that basically had these cardboard, they were like metal with cardboard that you would hang pants on. So I'd take the metal parts off and I would use those as drumsticks. So I did a lot of like improvising when I was a little kid, I guess. And then when I was 14, I had, you know, my family had moved back to Massachusetts at that time. And in Massachusetts, you can be 14 and have a job after school for like the hours between 3 and 6 legally. So I worked for my oldest sister, Michelle, and I saved up, and probably it was like maybe $3 at the time. I I got my first drum kit at 14, which was this piece of fucking cosmic percussion kit. But I basically lived in my basement between the ages of like 14 and 19 and just played drums. And that's when, you know, that's when I really started to take it seriously and really started to learn. You know, I would listen to songs and try to learn songs.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how did you learn? Did you take lessons or like George Hurley, teach yourself by listening to records and trying to play along?
Yeah, I went the George method. Yeah, definitely. I've never really had a music lesson in my life until the past couple of years. I had a cool situation where I worked with a lot of Boston musicians, more studied musicians, and picked up some stuff from them. And then, you know, my friend John Colpitz, who also goes by the name Kid Millions, who's a drummer for Oneida, band out of New York, who's fucking incredible. I've been taking some lessons with him, like some tuning lessons and whatnot. But yeah, for the most part, I'm pretty much self-taught on all of the instruments I play.
You know, I didn't ask you about first record you bought. You said it was you collected 45s.
Yeah, I had. Remember when I was a kid, my sister Denise, the one who bought me the drum set, she was always in trouble, man. She was always like on, you know, she was always grounded or whatnot. So to get out of the house, she would take me to this place called the Record Shack. And must have been in Mission Viejo. I can't quite remember, but one thing that always comes to mind, like a lot of those memories, I mean, it's 43 years ago now, so some of them are kind of cloudy, but I remember a couple of Queen records, and like I loved Queen, but like just some of their record covers, I would buy them, like, you know, is it Sheer Heart Attack that has like the robot with them dead in their in his hand, like, was so cool. So I remember those early records,
you know, when you're a kid, you only got a lot of money. Like, you had to work all that to get the drum set money up, and that's why I ask about that. What about the first gig you saw, Dan?
The first gig I saw, oh, man, I was sort of late to the gig game, but I guess, like, the first one that really really made a big impression was I saw The Cure on the Disintegration tour. And like, that was like, you know, as far as bigger shows, like, you know, I was really new to it then, but that, like, seeing that really kind of blew my mind. Okay. And then
you gave me this little sexer.
Yeah.
Pursuit. I want to play this.
Okay, cool.
I am always looking for a reason to be gone. Easier to hear it once and replay it until dark. Attempting to be innocent of breaking every heart. And now I only need to know one thing. Can you live without me? 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 Darling, you breathe easiest when the rhythm moves you on. Can you live without me? Can you live without me? We try to really teach ourselves that love is only free. Wishing for each one to find their own burning lonely star. And when we look above so high, we carve out the missing piece. But she is waiting down below, and I cannot hear her speak. Can you live without me? Oh, can you live without me? Can you live without me? Can you live without me? Baby, I know you're healing, but I can turn it back. Can you live without me? Can you live without me?
Watch for Pedro Show. Start that chunk of music off with Lil Sexer with Hirsute. Then Vanishing, brand new. From Vanishing, 55 degrees north, 5 degrees east. B-Noll with Can You Live Without Me? Vile Creature, Paper Doll. Bill Nace with the part 6 of 8 of his piece, Both. I'll say it right, Watt. Brand new from Vermes do Limbo. Atlantico. Bombas Prendin with Anthema Briefa. Graf out of the Netherlands with Succumb. And finally, some more Lil Sexer with The Best of the Only. And you say this stuff was just come out, but it was recorded, what, 25 years ago.
25 years ago, yeah. So Lil Sexer was not my first band by any means, but it was my first band that I ever really like felt like, holy shit, we're doing something. Like, we were playing gigs and we were playing, we're recording records and whatnot. So that is a band. We were a two piece I did with like one of my, lifelong buddies, David Waterhouse.
What was your first band?
Let's see. I think my first band was a band called the Mothmen that I did with my, my sister's then boyfriend, where, we kind of never really got off the ground. We started to write some songs, but, I was really young then. I was like maybe like 16, 15 or something like that. So I had a bunch of other high school bands that we did, mostly just like covers. I had a buddy I went to high school with who was like, at the time, he's just like a huge Metallica fan. I couldn't play those drum parts, then. So, we would do that, but Lil Sexer was the first band where we started writing our own songs, and, it became a real thing because we would spend so much time in the rehearsal space and, weed and wine, do whatever, we would sleep there and then get up and go to our jobs. But it felt like I was really accomplishing something, it pushed me out of my comfort zone to get out of an area of let's say, hey, let's hang out and jam, to, oh shit, we got to structure this out and make songs.
Can you remember the first Lil Sexer gig?
I can. Yes. It was absolutely terrifying. So the first gig we played was in David's loft in East Boston, Massachusetts. And we had a bunch of people show up. It was really cool. I was terrified. I think I was like 19. And then there was a band in Boston called 6L6, after the Tubes. And I really loved them. They were kind of like a Boston hardcore band. And their bass player, Ted Kondo, was working down the street from where I worked at this coffee shop. And I saw him one day and I was like, oh shit, you're in that band. I was nervous to talk to him. And the next time I went in, I brought our demo. And he was like, hey man, I really dug your demo. Do you want to open for us? And we were like, fuck, sure. So our first real show was at this club called O'Brien's in Alston, Massachusetts. And, I was really terrified because they were kind of a big band at the time. And it was, it was kind of a great show because I felt like I was going to puke before we went on, but once we started playing, it completely went away, and it seemed like I don't even remember the gig. I just remember the very last cymbal hit where I hit my cymbals. I actually broke the cymbal stand and it ended up in my lap, and I was like, it sort of like woke me out of this weird lucid state I was in. But it was great. That was a good first introduction to kind of like playing live.
Now, you said you recorded a demo. He heard a demo. Did you do that in your practice pad?
No, we actually went to a recording studio. It was recorded by the same engineer that recorded Hirsute and Best of the Only. But we did it at a different studio. Back in those days, in the mid to late 90s, that's what you did. You made a demo tape. You actually sent out press kits. You remember the deal. So yeah, so we made a demo with the intent it was just going to be a demo and not really kind of do anything with it. And then we actually went to, like a more fancy studio with a 2-inch 16 track tape machine. And that's when we kind of like re-recorded everything to, you know, with the intent of doing an album. And the reason that stuff took so long to come out is, you know, we did a whole record's worth of stuff, and then the band kind of imploded. You know, we were younger, and we were kind of, like, I guess, crazy, drugs, all kinds of, like, crazy shit back in the day when you're young. And we just kind of, you know, we've always kept in touch and always stayed, like, good friends, but we kind of just went our separate ways and on to other projects and whatnot, but always really, really loved it. And it's always been a thing for us to finally get it finished. So one good thing about the pandemic was we actually were able to just sit down and finish it. And in about a month, so my bandmate, he lives in Colorado now, so I'm going up there, and we're going to play a show, our first show in 21 years, and finish some of the other recordings.
Now, by this point, you got a better drum set, right?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. So I've gone through many, many over the years, but the second drum kit I ever bought was a set of like Pearl Session Elites. And I
Pearl,
still,
that's
I,
Peter Chris.
Yeah. I still have many of those shells. Like some, I don't know, got lost over the years. You know, I think maybe I've probably had that for about 26 years or something. So, yeah, I tend to hang on to stuff though.
A little shit hardened.
Yeah, exactly.
you never know when it's gonna come in handy, you know, like 25-year-old
exactly.
Recordings.
Sometimes, yeah, exactly.
You know, it just, that's the way it works out. It had to be. Some things
yeah.
just happen really quick. Some things, yeah, they got to, like, kind of ferment, right?
Exactly.
Now, you were involved with the composition, right?
Yeah. All of the bands I've ever played in have all had, like, a very democratic writing process where we just, you know, show up and write our own parts. And then also in Little Sexer, I played bass a lot of times, and David would switch off and play drums. And we were a two-piece, I'm not trying to sound like, you know, trailblazer, but before it became like a popular thing, and really the only reason we were was just because nobody wanted to play with us, you know, like we were kind of uncool. But it was great in a way where it definitely forced me out of my comfort zone and forced me to I love bass, I love guitar, I play clarinet, synthesizer, all that kind of shit. And, just like natural, interest and love of music sort of draws me to all kinds of stuff. But that was also really liberating at that time, was since my focus mainly was drums then, was, you know, just like playing bass. I was like, oh shit, this is really fun too. You know, I had no fucking clue what I was doing, but, it was really fun.
Well, as a composing tool, drums or bass?
Both.
Both. Okay. So you do write music on drum. You know, there was a big issue with Chico Hamilton. He couldn't get a credit for songwriting because, yeah, drummers can't write songs. It's just ridiculous.
It is. I always thought that was really weird. I mean, you know, like, I think it's weird when you see – it always bothered me when you see songwriting credits and, like, you know, I don't think, you know, let's say, like, fucking Paul McCartney or whatever, like, wrote out the drum parts for Beatles songs. You know, I've always been, like – who's ever in that room making their parts is a writer of the song, you know, like it's, I always thought that was weird that drummers kind of get the snub there, but you know.
Yeah. Reading Mr. Mingus's book, Beneath Underdog, great bass man, but he didn't compose on the bass. He composed on piano.
Oh, I think I heard that. Yeah. I think I knew that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. It's I guess almost that, like bass and drums. Not only is there hierarchy on the stage, but in the writing room, too.
Yeah. I mean, that probably explains a little bit about, like, his interesting approach to the bass. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Yeah.
I didn't... Yeah. That's pretty cool to think about.
I've always felt like wild-ass Duke Ellington things he was trying to do, you know, take big bands, totally. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. That's cool.
That Epitaph thing that came out after he passed, we lost him, you know, it was really interesting. We're at the end of the first hour, September 17, 2021, this Watt Pedro Show, special guest Dan Boucher. Hold tight for hour two. September 17, 2021, it's the second hour of Watt Pedro Show.
Thank you. myself. Thank you.
For Pedro Show, start off the second hour, Lay Feeling with the Young and the Fretless.
Yeah.
All right. We're not talking about the bass. Right. That's why Mr. Leo Fender called it precision, because it had frets. Right. Because the real.
Did not.
Yeah. Regular basses were like giant violins without a chin part. Lucas Abella.
Right.
Yeah. Lucas Abella with Renault, part one of two. Big piece. And he just came out with some new stuff. We'll play future. I love his stuff. How Sydney. Young Sexy Assassins with Bad King Sex Fuhrer. So enlighten us about those projects.
I'll start with the Young Sexy Assassins because that was like a little bit older. That might possibly be like one of my favorite bands I've ever played in. So that was that kind of arose, you know, I guess somewhat early on when I started playing with Neptune. And there was a band who we're going to talk about a little later in Boston called The Grand Island, who are one of my favorite bands ever. They were just so incredible. And Justin, their bass player, is I think you'd appreciate the tone that he got. I just never heard anything like the way he plays, just like so pummeling and just such a like purely evil, awesome sound. You know, I'd kind of always like wanted to be in a band with him. And so at the time, it was like three members of Neptune, my friends Mark Pearson and John Manson, and then Justin Stratman from the Grand Island, and our friend Duncan was playing keyboards. And we all just got together with, you know, we didn't have any set vision of what the band was going to be other than like everybody was going to bring something completely different to it. And I really love how that band turned out. I think like that was some of the most free I've ever felt playing music. We really gelled together really well. And performatively, it was a really fun band because John Manson, who was a singer and he did like drum machines and whatnot, he would always sit behind a desk and he looked like an angry sports commentator. So he would sit behind a desk and rifle through papers. And, you know, we used to say that the band was maximalist desk rock. So that was an awesome project. And we were lasted for maybe 3 or 4 years, but playing in that band was so fun. It was just like really like, it just kind of had this like insane sort of ferocity to it. Like that's how it felt when I was playing anyways. So that was really fun. And our friend Dave Utzinger later took over on keyboards. And then Lay Feeling is something that's a more recent project, that I started with my dear friend Tom Roach. And Tom, he played in a really well loved Minneapolis bass band called Lifter Puller, I think starting back in the '90s. And so he and I were both, you know, like kind of, I would always say like rock and roll casualties, you know, we'd spend tons of years like touring and whatnot. And you know, without getting like too tangential, but, the way we met, we had met in passing and Neptune was going to Europe on our first ever European tour. And the tour for family reasons ended up getting canceled 5 days in. But I ended up staying in Paris. Tom was writing his dissertation, in Paris. And so I just said, hey, can I stay with you for the next month? So stayed in Paris and we just ended up becoming, you know, like lifelong buddies. And there is this like shitty, terrible gay bar down the street from where he lived called Lay Feeling. And we just thought that was so fucking funny. Like, I don't know, like, you know, we used to sing, remember the Boston song, More Than a Feeling? We would sing like, more than Lay Feeling. So, you know, many years later, when it came time to name our band, we were just like, obviously it's going to be Lay Feeling. So the idea of that band is, I really wanted to not play drums for a while. And Tom also was like, you know, he's like, I want to play bass, but I want to kind of explore some new stuff. And, you know, for most of my musical life, I just love abrasive rock music. And, you know, in recent years, I've been getting more into, you know, I listen to like a lot of William Basinski and, you know, like, Andrew Chalk, like a lot of like really mellow stuff. So we decided to take a more mellow approach and, you know, wanted to do like sort of like long format, still like really, you know, trying to be, I guess, difficult in some ways, but also incorporate, you know, like melody in interesting ways and rhythms, but like rhythms that one of the first songs we composed, Tom was writing a drum part and, you know, we were like, we weren't really happy with it. And then we were like trying different things out. And then we came up with the idea of like, what if it sounds like just throwing one drum down a flight of stairs? And that's what we ended up basing the song around. So so there's been a lot of experimentation, and it's a lot mellower, I guess, than other bands that I've played in. There's a lot of like serenity to it. But another thing in that band is I really didn't want to be a band that is just like, you know, two dudes twiddling knobs, because who wants to watch that? So our dear friend Mark Pearson, who is my Young Sexy Assassins and Neptune bandmate, we asked him, we were like, hey, would you just sit in on a rehearsal and let us know if we're like the most fucking boring thing you've ever seen? And he was like, I really like the music, but you should, you know, what if you like think of some kind of visuals? So what we started doing is like the kind of theme of our band is we started live soundtracking radical queer and feminist film. So a lot of films like, you know, Pipilotti Wrist and Kenneth Anger and Derek Jarman and all that stuff. So that also really informed how we wrote songs. So that's been a really like highlight of my musical journey, I would say, in the past couple of years.
Dan, speaking of Neptune, I'm going to play some Neptune you gave me.
Sweet.
Into our bunks, and then we saw the light.
Watch for Pedro, show that chunk of music. Start off with Neptune, the lighthouse. Then Totale, from the Italian part of Switzerland. Isolde, If Moana, Al Margolis out of Chester, New York. Dress Me Down, Conquest for Death, Blood Sport of the Gods. And then finally Neptune, again, with Chandelier of Leaves. Lightness, hear a little about Neptune. Got a couple minutes left in this hour. Inform us, please, Brother Dan.
All right, cool. I'll try to keep it concise, which is not my strong point, usually. Neptune is like a very much an artistic love of my life. The band was founded by my dear friend Jason Sanford, and he was a sculpture student and performance art major. So he decided, he was like, well, I like guitar. What if I start making my own? So he started making these welded guitars out of metal that are really haphazard. And, you know, the frets are, you know, oftentimes like filed down nails. And the early versions of these guitars were like really untunable and haphazard. And I mean, these instruments have drawn blood from all of us. And the cool thing about Neptune is I was a big fan of the band before I joined. They needed a percussionist and they asked me if I would be interested. And I was just like, fuck yes, I would be so interested. So, first show with them was like about 21, almost 22 years ago, actually. And, it was really great. And, you know, at the end of that show, I thought I was going to be like, you know, just a one and done thing. But I said to Jason, I was like, I want to be in this band. I love this. I want to do it. So we really kind of, you know, that's all we did. We did like a solid when, you know, my tenure in the band, was, you know, we toured solidly for 10 years. And I think in 10 years we did 22 releases. But the evolution of the instruments that Jason and Mark would make went into, you know, electronics and synthesizers. So a lot of the synthesizers look like, you know, like, well, honestly, most of the shit was like probably bought at Home Depot. So they're all like light switches and everything. And, you know, the writing process in that band was so awesome because, again, we'd all get together in a room and like, you know, flesh out ideas or whatever. And then sometimes like if there was a mistake, we would go back and try to write these mistakes into the music. It was really fun. So in one of our press kits, we said, Mark, you know, put this line that the band sometimes sounds like Mistake Day at the Ball Bearing Factory, which is very true. But yeah, so because of the nature of the instruments, it just always sounds like really kind of like off and strange and, you know, like I guess otherworldly. So,
that's not a bad thing. Look, we're at the end.
No, that's what I love about it.
We're at the end of the second hour, September 17, 2021 edition. Watt Pedro's special guest, Dan Boucher. Hold tight for hour three. September 17, 2021. It's the third hour of the Walk from Pedro show.
In the year of the final fall, the storm terrestrial flood, men lost as the melancholy horse. Man was the lord of the earth. He made him an hollow skin from the heart of an holy tree. He cometh the earth therein. Man was the lord of the sea. He controls the vigorous steam. He harnessed the lightning for hire. He drove the celestial team. And man was the lord of the fire. He escaped mouths from their throne as deep seated. The choirs of the eons declare the last of the demons defeated.
Just come.
Watch the Pedro Show start off third hour with Golden Shores. Man was the Lord of the Fire. Then the Grand Island. Now this, from your label, you got some releases here. You'll tell us about it after you get done here. But Baby 84 from the Grand Island. You were talking about them earlier. Stuffed Spider with Armored Train. Nick Sadler with Wrong Heart. Infrastructure Rot. Dementia Test. And finally, Reversible Light. Locker Room. Tell us about your label. Tell us about these releases.
Yeah, this has been kind of a love of my life that, you know, I selfishly started this label in 2005 in order to release some of the even weirder material that Neptune was working on. And it's just something I always thought about doing. So, you know, like I said, a lot of it was to release music of bands that I was playing on. And I always thought that that was, you know, that was just like really like weirdly selfish of me. So I've always wanted to like, you know, do some other stuff with other bands. So that's something I started to do like in, you know, in the past, like, I guess like 5-10 years or whatever. And it really saved me during the pandemic because I think in 2020, I planned on doing 5 releases and, it ended up becoming 17 that year. And it was great because I love working with other musicians. I love, like, it keeps me in touch with friends and, like, I really do, like, I love, like, weird fucking music and that's what I want to do. And, you know, I think our, you know, whatever you call it, mission statement or whatever you say about the label is, uneasily digestible musics on near obsolete formats. I think that sort of sums it up pretty well. So for the things you played and that's upcoming is the Grand Island, which again, they were a Boston band in the 90s and early 2000s. They were just like fucking incredible. It was bass, drums, guitar, and electric piano, and all 4 of the members sang. And watching them perform was like, it was almost like being in like an interactive like boxing match with the band. It was brutal, but they had such a cool sound. They were so unique, and they were just like criminally underseen. So, you know, I've been friends with those guys, and so coming up, I think it's October is we're doing a full release of their back catalog, which is astounding. They recorded some incredible music, so it's all been remastered. That's coming out. Stuffed Spider is my friend Matt Parrish, who was in a really well-loved Boston band called Hoag in the 2000s, and he's doing some really, really awesome stuff. That song Armored Train, I just love. And he did a record last year, which was great. He's working on some new ones that are coming out, or later this year. And then Infrastructure Rot is, my buddies, Sean, Brent, and Joe. And Joe, the drummer, is, he lives in Taipei now. And he's in a band called Zerpents with Paul Lai, who you had on the show, a couple of weeks ago, I think. When was it?
Last week.
Oh, it was last week. Oh, okay.
Paul was great. Yeah, Paul was great. Maybe I'll get to play with him over there. I would love to.
Yeah, and you should definitely play with Joe too. He's just incredible. Like, very dedicated. All those guys are like super dedicated. Just like, so they're they're like, you know, sort of really out there jazz, but they're fucking great. They were like my favorite band in Providence. And then Nick Sadler, is another friend of mine. He plays in the band Daughters, and, he's been working on this stuff, these recordings he did that are just this like really dark electronic, sometimes pummeling stuff. I really love it. It's really, you know, it's like, it's eerie, it's creepy. And, you know, I feel it kind of like it's very representative of Nick himself. So that we're working on, that's coming out. But there's a lot of other things coming up that we have planned for the label.
What about Reversible Light and Golden Shores?
So Golden Shores is a band of, you know, a bunch of weirdos where we did, that was more like, you know, like kind of like found sound. weird stuff. So Sean, who plays in Infrastructure Rot, is also a member of that band. We have a new record coming out, which we recorded a while ago, but we've been slowly working on it over the years. That's coming out within the next couple of months. And then Reversible Light is my project with Alec Redfern. So we, Alec and I, have been playing together. We did a band called Say You Love Satan during the pandemic. And so Reversible Light, we just got together at a studio called Machines with Magnets in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and our good friend Seth Manchester recorded. It's just basically we did, 15-minute takes, and we recorded it. It's just drums and modular synths. And we did it to 2-inch tape, and we really kind of pushed the tape. So that stuff, we're currently mixing it. I think in about 2 weeks, we're going to mix the record, and that's going to be coming out in the next few months. So there's a lot planned for the label, and that's kind of, I want to really make that.
Dan, the name of the label.
Wrong Hole Archival Bureau.
Okay. Yeah, just gotta let people know. And it has a website, right?
Yeah, it does. Bandcamp is where we do all of our stuff. So yeah, if you just go to Bandcamp and look up Wrong Hole Archival Bureau, it has all the artists on it.
I want to play some more Lay Feeling.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wofford Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Shadow is the Queen of Color from Lay Feeling. Then Ray Shim Zips, and finally Golden Shores, Adrift from Hope. Now, what do you want to tell the people about your label?
So last thing about the label is it's called Wrong Hole Archival Bureau, and that's WRNGWHOLE Archival Bureau, WWAB. The last Golden Shores, Adrift from Hope, is from our new record that's coming out in the next couple of months. People it should be fairly easy to find the Wrong Hole Archival Bureau on Bandcamp and listen to all of the artists there.
And so you're busy with the label. You're busy getting out old stuff. But are you doing stuff right? Well, I guess with Alec, with Reversible Light, right? Is that the most contemporary thing?
That is my most contemporary thing. But yeah, so I've been talking a lot with Jason from Neptune, who is also in Colorado. And he's, we've been talking about doing some new stuff with, you know, Mark and our friend Kevin Micah also. We're planning on, Jason's building some new, like, really weird atonal instruments that aren't necessarily in tune with one another, but have a relationship to one another, which excites me beyond belief. So we're talking about doing that. And then
Does he have a website where he shows
yes,
all his instruments and stuff? Because he sounds like a kind of Harry Parch type of cat.
Definitely, definitely. And, I have a bass guitar here that's the body of it is made out of an old Betamax metal VHS case. So you can find the band at neptuneband.com. I think now it's neptune-band.com. Also, it's Neptune Band on Bandcamp, and you can find that through the Wrong Hole Archival Bureau page. But there's a lot of pictures of the instruments, and during my tenure of the band, I've had a couple rounds of stitches. I've had an eyeball glued shut. They're definitely there's something else.
They're dangerous to play.
They're dangerous for sure.
Shit. A little, buyer beware kind of thing.
Exactly.
You say it's worth it, though, because the band is pushing boundaries.
Yeah. I can't, like, overstate how much it's really been, like, a love of my life kind of project. And that is what I loved about it before I joined the band was, you know, they're always pushing boundaries and, you know, they're always, like, there's always such a performative element to the band. Before I joined the band, just watching them, just looking at these like fucking crazy, it would always get likenings to Mad Max. But yeah, watching this like crazy Mad Max band was always really appealing to me. And when I first started playing in the band, I played what they called a saw blade xylophone. And it was just like this huge metal rack with circular saw blades on it, which, you know, if you hit them, they're beautiful. There's like beautiful tones, but I have scars up and down my arms from that. I had five stitches and a knuckle from, you know, bashing the shit out of it once. So,
well, as you guys get back together, you got to be safe, Dan, please.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. we're getting too old for that injury shit.
Not too old, less younger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Look, big honor to have you on. Thanks so much. Keep on keeping on with what you're doing and helping other bands. That's a beautiful thing that Music Cat can do for another.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. Thank you so much for having me on, man. It was total honor and pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Okay, people, it's been September 17, 2021 edition, the Wofford Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.